sitting there.
Good afternoon. We're going to open up the Joint Committee on Ways and Means Subcommittee on General Government. Today is March 28th, 2017. And colleagues, today we're going to open up a public hearing on House Bill 5017, the Legislative Revenue Office and the Legislative Fiscal Office. What do we need to know as we kickstart this?
Okay. Good afternoon, members of the committee. What we have today is the beginning of what will be 4 days of hearings on the legislative branch agencies. There's 6 legislative branch agencies, so you're going to hear about those. Today you're going to hear from LEG Revenue and LEG Fiscal. Tomorrow you will have LAC at LEG Admin and the new Legislative Policy and Research Office. Thursday we'll talk about the Assembly and Legislative Council, and then next Tuesday will be the Commission on Indian Services, which is the 6 of the agencies. In your overview documents that we've provided, we have a table that shows you the legislative branch as a total, and then each at the back you'll see tables for each of the offices. I would notice that the table that we'll end up talking about more is the 2017-19 current service level. You do see a governor's budget number there. For context, the governor does not make a recommendation about the legislative branch, nor the judicial branch. But what does happen in that governor's process is as they complete the budget and they determine what kind of a reduction, if you will, in current service level, if there is a reduction, but in this case there was a reduction to current service level, what percentage that was for the executive branch, they then apply it to the other branches for the purposes of a governor's recommended budget proposal. So again, they don't get into any detail about what would happen, and obviously whether that even does have to happen, but that is part of how the governor balances the budget, is to apply that same percentage. So that's all the governor's budget does, is just apply that flat percentage. In terms of issues for the branch, a couple things to point out. As you see the current service level there, a number of the issues that you'll see in terms of dollars relate to debt service and relate to projects and construction. In fact, in our current service level, about 12% of that is debt service, related to debt service. And you'll hear more about that in particular from Darren Hill tomorrow when you hear about LAC. The other big change in this 17-19 budget is the creation of the Legislative Policy and Research Office. While that was created last biennium and last session, it did not officially become its own agency until 2017. So they have been operating this year under a memorandum of agreement, but this is the budget that will officially pull it apart, create that 6th office. The budget will become theirs, and you'll see a decrease in legislative administration that, for the most part, corresponds. There's a little bit of an increase between the two. It's not a pure transfer, but that's the other big issue that's there. So that's kind of my initial comments. And again, for the branch, a lot of what you'll hear during these hearings might be a little different than you would have from other agencies, more focused on first becoming familiar with these organizations and what they do and how they're organized, and then later we'll move on to more about the numbers.
All right, perfect. Any initial questions or comments from the committee? No? All right. Paul, do you want to come on up? Welcome.
And these materials are on your.
I can bring my computer.
Oh, this is absolutely.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Paul Warner, Legislative Revenue Officer. And I think you have our kind of budget material that Teresa's provided you with. I thought what I would do is just kind of give you a very high level overview of that, and then for any questions that you have about our operation. The Legislative Revenue Office consists of 8 FTE, so we're relatively small. We do have an IT position that we share with the Legislative Fiscal and also work some time with the IS Department as well, but she primarily works with us on the Revenue Impact System, and that's a position that is in our budget, but we share with the other agencies. We have 6 economists, including myself. And then we also have our office manager, Corinne Gavatt, is in the back with me, and she prepares our budget material works with our session staff. We have 3 session staff that are with us now, 2 committee assistants, and also a receptionist to help us with contacts with the public. In terms of our mission really is to provide a high-quality analysis on revenue issues, and I think there's everyone here is well aware of the difficulties of trying to project the future and anticipate human behavior and all those things that go into a revenue impact. But the thing that really drives our analysis and what I always tell our economists are that you probably don't have enough information to make a precise answer, but what you can do is provide an unbiased answer. And that's the goal that we have, to take all the information that we have and provide you with unbiased answers. So you can be confident that this is not either lowballed or highballed for any reason other than to try to be as close as we can to what actually will happen. We have, in terms of that quality of analysis, the key is to maintain our highly skilled staff. We have about 85% of our budget is personnel, so that's largely what it comprises, and basically from our economists. We continually strive to use technology better. We have a series of methodological tools. We have a computable general equilibrium model that we built 15 years ago. We continually update that. We're one of the few states, we're actually one of two states that has a CG model that was built in-house. Nebraska is the other state. Both of us relied very heavily on California in designing our model, but we've been able to maintain it, and so has Nebraska. A lot of states use economic models that are off the shelf, primarily the REMI model, which is the regional economic modeling, and we also have that model as well that we use for comparative purposes. So our programs and our target groups, obviously for us, for my statutory appointing authority, it's the chair of the House Revenue Committee and the chair of the Senate Finance and Revenue Committee, and then the two presiding officers. So that's who my direct appointing authorities are. We spend most of our time working with the House Revenue Committee and the Senate Finance and Revenue Committee during the session, staffing those committees. We also have a joint tax credit committee that's been established when we went to a sunset review process for the tax credits. That committee, we staff, and it just comprises of our revenue committee, two revenue committees. So it's a combination, but it's a working on the same type of issues. We would anticipate that committee coming together in May to review the tax credit sunsets, extensions and modifications that have gone through the policy committees. We also work closely, of course, with the legislature in general. We are responsible for statutorily providing revenue impact statements on all bills that are in work session that are going to the floor. So right now we're in that scramble process with a first chamber deadline coming that will get literally dozens of bills a day. A lot of them are no revenue impact, but you still have to review them and make sure of that. Those that are, I assign to my economists. They typically have a subject area, such as property tax or income tax or transportation, and so I'll assign it to them, and they'll do the review and prepare the revenue impact statements for the committees. We work a lot with local governments. The property tax system is obviously a key area for us in the revenue system. And we work very closely with them and the school districts as well because of the importance of the property tax system. In terms of our performance measures, you have the biennial survey. I think that's the used for all of the legislative service agencies. So you can see kind of what our targets are and what that looks like. In terms of some environmental factors or things that have been that we're looking to as we look to 17-19, first of all, the budget numbers that Teresa put together for you are at current service level, so that's what the numbers reflect. We have a tax credit review process that was established along with the Joint Tax Credit Committee. And an economist position was added in the 13-15 biennium to focus a lot on that process. And I think we are, when we've been involved in looking at this issue at the national level, and I think we are one of the most advanced states in terms of analyzing our tax credits and through a systematic process. That position was the only time we've had a position increase since we were created in 1975. So we actually had the same number of people at that time. There's a number of things that we have been involved in that take up a lot of our time. Traditionally, we have been very involved in the voter initiative process. In the 1990s, we did the analysis for the Measure 5, for Measure 47, and then later for Measure 50 that came through the revenue committees. The revenue committees also designed the school distribution formula that was a result of Measure 5. This past session, we were very involved with Measure 97, which was a major tax proposal. We did analysis of that and provided that to the legislature and to the public in general. And tried to provide a description and an objective estimates of what the impacts might be. We have been continually involved with tax reform options. One of the characteristics of states that have unbalanced revenue systems, that have just two of the three major taxes, they tend to study their systems a lot. And I don't know if that makes tax reform any more likely, but what it does do is, and what I think we have accomplished over the last 25 years I've been working on this, is I think we have improved our analytical tools for analyzing tax reform proposals. So we spend a lot of time with that and continuing to work on that now and during this session as we look at some different taxes that are available in other states that are not currently operating in Oregon, and we have to, of course, work from scratch to come up with an estimate of what that base might look like. The other thing that we're anticipating...
Oh, we're going to take a question real quick. Mr. Sure. Co-Chair.
Thank you, Paul. You had mentioned some different tax in other states. How does that work here?
Mr. Chair, the how would we analyze a tax that we don't have in Oregon now?
Yeah.
Well, I'll give you an example of what we're working on now. We're spending a lot of time on Ohio's CAT, which is the commercial activity tax. Ohio established the commercial activity tax in 2006. So what we do is we get detailed information from Ohio, and then through the industry, which industries are paying that tax, how it's distributed across filing groups in terms of number of receipts or sales, is basically a gross receipts tax. And so we apply that to Oregon based on our economic model of Oregon and what the size of our sectors are. So we scale it to Oregon's economy and see how much revenue it would raise if it were in Oregon, and then how it would be distributed among the different industries and among the different size of businesses.
Okay, so if follow up. So that's just looking at a model from a different state. That's not the implementation of that model. It's just say that, okay, well, here is one thing that we're looking at, but we're not doing it because what we need the voters to agree upon it or.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mr. Chair, there's several aspects to that. One is. We can look at Ohio's economy or any other state's economy that has a tax and look at the differences in our economy and scale it to that. So have a sense of what the magnitude would be and who would be affected by it. But the I think the second part of the issue you raise is you've got to have the Department of Revenue be able to administer it. And so we work with them directly. For example, we've looked at the tax forms that Ohio uses. What are they asking taxpayers, information are they asking to provide? What kind of issues, what kind of legal issues have they had in terms of implementing their particular tax? There's a lot of nexus issues in state taxation. Can states actually tax certain activities, and do those violate any nexus requirements? Those kinds of things. So that's another aspect of it. The third aspect, really, in terms of the political decisions and you know how voters react, that's really you as policymakers. That's really the area that we look to you and say, here's what we think based on what we've seen in other states, and then try to address questions that you have on that. And of course, we know that you know in any public sector decisions, the public obviously has to go along with those major decisions.
Chief Justice Ballmer did that, kicked it right back to me. So thank you for that.
Yes, you're welcome. So the other thing, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I thought I'd mention that we are looking at now, and well, we've talked with the House Revenue Committee and Senate Revenue Committee about this, but we do anticipate the possibility of some significant changes at the federal level, which is something we would have to be prepared for, particularly the possibility of some major changes at the corporate income tax level. And so that's something we're kind of anticipating and waiting, and the timing of that could be very tricky as we look at the possibility of those federal decisions not occurring until the interim. So we'll be trying to make sure you're informed about that and what those implications are.
Senator, do you have a question?
I do. And I may be jumping a little ahead in your presentation, Dr. Warner, but I'm thinking about how many more voter-initiated tax measures there may be, and the degree of complication, and the fact that in my service in the legislature, we look to LFO for certain specialty analysis of agencies. We look to you for that unbiased analysis of both legislative proposals and ballot measures. Do you have, and this is stupid colleagues to ask an agency person, you got enough money. Do you have enough people to keep up with the timely analysis given the complexity and the proliferation of the proposals coming at you?
Senator Johnson, Mr. Chair, I think that, you know, you're always in a position where These issues, as you know, are extremely complex, and so if you had more talent and more resources, you could delve deeper into them. But there's a number of areas where you're never going to get a right answer on it. So I think you have to achieve kind of a level that is at least comparable to what other states have. And in this type of analysis, and while we don't have the size, obviously, of a California Department of Finance or something, but I think for states our size, I think we're more than comparable. I think we have a good quality of analysis, and I think within our budget we could maintain that and be one of the better achieving states in that type of work.
Thank you for a very straightforward answer, but I'm speaking more to the co-chairs. When I think about our reliance on these
big time
parts of the legislative branch, how important it is, and as you're trying to decide what to do with virtually no money, I look at some of the legislative expenses in the caucus offices, and that cuts across all caucuses, both sides of the building, and I think of eight people that are trying to stay ahead of this tsunami of information pouring at us and from us onto you. And I just would hope that we keep our analysts robust so that we've got the ability to fight back if we need to and advocate where we have to.
Yeah, mm-hmm. A great point.
Yes, it's appreciate that, Senator.
Co-chair.
You have a question?
No.
There you go.
Sorry,
representative. Sorry about that.
Thank you, Co-chair. I forget which one of you to look at. I wanted to ask, just expand on Senator Johnson's question. And less to focus on the initiative process and more to focus on the potential for significant tax reform. And I'm wondering what the implications of that, if we were actually able to initiate a transition from, say, a corporate income tax to a business activities tax, what the impact of that would be on your operation.
Representative Marsh, Mr. Co-Chairs, I think that for us, the key thing would be able to have the information we need to analyze, mm-hmm. how things are going in terms of the revenue, who's affected. And for that kind of information, to get that data, we rely heavily on the Department of Revenue.
Yeah,
and that is our source. And we have to work closely with them. And we do, and we have some statutory allowance for us in terms of disclosure laws and to look at actual returns and that kind of thing, and that really does help us. So I think the main thing for us was to make sure that we're getting good quality information from them timely, and that we can analyze it, and that's the thing we're always concerned about. We were concerned when they went in to develop their new computer overhaul of their system, which of course came through this subcommittee, and spent a lot of time on that. And that's the thing we want to make sure we continue to get that high-quality information. Mm-hmm. If we do, I feel pretty confident that we would be able to analyze and look at those at what's happening. The most difficult thing for us in terms of analysis, I'm sure you know from the committee, is the corporate data.
Right.
And it's just it's very labyrinthian. You have multiple affiliates. They're filing on the same return under a combined return that we have in Oregon, and it's very difficult to get precise issues such as nexus issues. And we've seen this. You know, the committee, the revenue committee, for example, had a report on apportionment for broadcasters, and there's not even agreement of who's a broadcaster. So, you know, those kinds of corporate issues are very difficult to deal with. And I don't know how many staff, I don't think more staff would help do that. I think that just more clarity would help. But certainly going to a tax that would be less complicated than corporate income tax would probably improve our analysis.
It appears that the relationship between your office and the Oregon Department of Revenue is a positive one with a good reciprocal relationship. Is that fair?
Mr. Chair, I would say that's definitely true. It's, you know, we have a, going back historically, we've had a long-term relationship. Our first legislative revenue officer, Richard Munn, went over and was director of Department of Revenue for a number of years. So we've developed, I think, a real clear working relationship. You know, a lot of states, the executive branch through their Department of Revenue will do the revenue impact estimates. But in Oregon, we've set it up so that we're actually, we do the revenue impacts on the legislative side. They provide us with the data. You also see a lot of times in other states where you'll have the executive branch doing a revenue forecast and the legislative branch doing a revenue forecast. And so we've made that agreement years ago, back in the 70s, that executive branch handles all current law estimates, and we take care of all proposed law estimates. And I think that's worked pretty well.
Great.
So, and I think we do have a good relationship, not only with Department of Revenue, but we work very closely with the Office of Economic Analysis and with them.
Excellent. Any other questions from the committee? Please continue.
Okay, Mr. Chair, that's the only thing I would say is that basically our budget request is for a current service level, mm-hmm. which we feel comfortable with being able to maintain our quality service. If we do get into a budget reduction situation, we are very limited because so much of our costs are our personnel costs. The areas where we have spent some additional in service and supplies is through contracts we've had, for example, with the REMI, Regional Economic Modeling Institute. That's helped us give us another perspective. We do hire some professional services to help us with our CGE model. We have gone to a contractor, former LRO employee, Ed Waters, who helps us work through changes in the model, updates of the model, and that's been a big advantage for us, I think.
How's continuing education dollars for your 8 staff members? Are you folks able to stay on top of industry standards, et cetera?
Mr. Chair, I think we are. I mean, it's always something we could certainly find some things, additional things to do, but I think we've been able to maintain our training and also we want to make sure that we maintain our technology. And one thing we didn't do this past session was upgrade our computers, update them, and that's something we will be able to do within the current service budget for next session. We've had some of our laptops are starting to fail on us in the hearing rooms. So, but we made the decision to wait until this coming year, so I think we're fine with that.
Perfect. Thank you. All right. Any other questions or comments from the committee? Sir, we appreciate you.
Okay.
Please know we appreciate all the great work you do and your mm-hmm. staff does for the Oregon Legislature, and you're greatly appreciated.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members of the committee.
Thank you. All righty.
I'm assuming Ken is on his way in. If he doesn't, I'm assuming that's probably him. But the one thing I would mention, if anybody is looking at the detail on the current service level for legislative revenue, there is one technical glitch we do need to take care of where there was a double count.
Okay.
So that'll be done when we get to the work session.
Perfect. What's the score in the game?
$1.8 million.
All right. Welcome, sir.
Thank you very much.
Floor is all yours.
Mr. Chair, members, I'm Ken Rocco with the Legislative Fiscal Office. And here to give you some information about the office and what we do and what we don't do. So our we have a mission statement, and our mission is to promote state fiscal accountability. We try to do that through providing objective research, analysis, and evaluation of state expenditures, financial affairs, program administration, agency operations. We were created in 1959. It was a part of a statewide reform, government reform effort at that time, and it was the same time the emergency board was created through a constitutional amendment. And so they, at that time, the office was set up to sort of have that fiscal staff for the emergency board. So we are a nonpartisan, independent, permanent staff office to the legislature, just like Paul Warners, who was just talking to you. We are here year-round, so we're an ongoing staff support. And we staff a number of committees. I'll get into some details, I mean, some examples of those in a minute. Our budget's pretty straightforward. We have a total funds budget of about $8 million. We have 22 positions. Our fund, we are split between general fund and other funds. The source of the other funds is the central government service charge, which was added to our budget maybe 4 years ago. We used that instead of general fund in one of the efforts of the legislature to reduce general fund use in the legislative branch.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah, Senator Johnson.
I don't know why this didn't occur to me before, but if you're getting other funds that are part of the central government service charge, how much of that money just gets passed around from agencies? We're assessing agencies. You get a piece of it. Do you guys get assessed?
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, this is an assessment that it tries to get at agencies that have other funds in their budgets. So the assessment is to charge the other funds for central government services. And I think the entities that get a cut of this money are, I think, the governor's office, legislative council gets a part of it. And it had been expenses related to the emergency board, because we basically are serving agencies when they come to the emergency board for requests. And so it was just felt that that could be expanded from just the emergency board, which we never knew what that meant, because, you know, how can you decide how much, what part of the LFO budget was that, or, you know, something else. So it was expanded to include roughly, it's a flat amount. I think it's like $3 million a biennium or something like that.
I'm not suggesting doing anything with it. I was just wondering about all this money that sort of churns within agency land, and DAS gets its piece. I've never understood that. I've been doing DAS's budget since I walked in the door, and I'll be damned if I know how that works. But this is the first time that I have just had the display hit me the way it did.
So our organization chart is fairly easy to understand. We have, like I said, we have 22 positions. We also have a position down in the bottom box there that we share with legislative revenue. The position is in legislative revenue's budget, however, but we get services from that position. It's an IT system specialist person that helps us with our, like our FIS-RIS system, which is how we do fiscal impacts, and our performance measurement system, which is also an IT-based system. So that position has been very helpful, because the person in that position has learned our business processes, both ours and legislative revenues, and can advocate for us in the IT techie world, and because she speaks their language and most of us don't. So, we have two management positions, my position and then a deputy. We have an office manager who controls things in and out of the office. We have one administrative support position, which is usually at the front desk. And as you can see, we have 18 budget analysts. They have a variety of responsibilities. The legislative analysts primarily do fiscal impact work during the session, and they also have small budget assignments so that they have things to do when we're not in session, and they work on special projects and other kind of reviews that we do. We have some senior legislative analysts, three positions, and these are people that do medium to large size agencies. And then we have 10 what we call principal analysts. Eight of those have program area responsibilities during session, so they're the people that work with the co-chairs of the of each of our subcommittees to do scheduling, and they're the main contact, and they sort of coordinate the activities of the other analysts. Two of those positions are information technology positions because we found that we needed some expertise to review state projects and didn't have that. So we were provided one position maybe 8 years ago to enhance that, and then we carved out another existing position because we found that that one position was overwhelmed by the number of projects. Yeah. So we now have two positions dedicated to information technology research and review.
Mr. Rocco, is that enough? Because even in the beginning of this session, every single agency has come in with an IT project, and they're from little bitty agencies to this morning, OLCC in with their lamentations about their lack of IT. And as that issue area is so complicated, and you just opine that it takes people with special language skills to speak to each other about this complexity, we rely on your office to tell us what's up as agencies are starting to come up with some of these programs. And all of us, at least those of us that have served any time here at all, when an agency says IT, we get a garlic and a crucifix. And so I'm just curious about whether or not you've got the horsepower to help us with this seemingly endless requests for IT.
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, we always try to be as effective and efficient as we can with the resources that we have available to us. And right now we have, I think the answer is yes, that we can cover this right now, but it's partly due to the individuals we have who have extensive knowledge of these systems. And are really good at speaking this language of IT stuff. And we work closely with the state CIO's office. And so, in some instances where there are DAS positions, our Department of Administrative Services positions, we rely on them to help us too. But we need these individuals to watch what they're doing and work closely with them. So if there is an area of our office that could maybe use some help in the future, this may be one of them, just because of the dollar amounts and the complexity of some of these big IT projects. Right now what they do is they divide them up. They have a list of over 100 projects. They divide them up, and they focus on the critical ones, the ones that have the highest risk factors. So they have an entire methodology of sorting these projects out and deciding, working with the budget analysts for the agency that will own the project. And then we come up with a list of what they will do and which ones they're going to look at.
Mr. Chair, I'll tell you what motivates my question. When I think about DMV, Department of Motor Vehicles, looking at a 10-year, $100 million project, I just don't understand with technology turning as fast as it is right now, and I'd be happy to show you the beta cam I've got in my garage that was once the hottest thing on the planet. I just don't know how a project that is meant to integrate a lot of Department of Motor Vehicle Services can take 10 years and cost $100 million and not cause all of us that have to go out and stand in front of town halls and explain it to not break out in hives worrying about it. And I just want to make sure you've got the horsepower to look at this stuff.
Well, I, Mr. Chair and Senator, I think one of the things that has helped us is that we're now requiring some rigor in the process. So we're requiring agencies to go through this stage gate process that we've worked with the executive branch to develop, which means that before projects can get too far along, we are requiring them to do all of this analysis and business case examination of the business case before they get too far along. So I think we're trying to prevent some of the disasters of the past by having this upfront discussion with them. And sometimes that extends the life of a project because it'll take you two, three years to do the planning work, you know, so.
Cool.
But.
So really quick, Representative.
Good. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So thanks, Mr. Rocco, for the presentation. I want to pile on Senator Johnson, what she brought up there. So when I first started a term ago, the IT committee was a Ways and Means committee, and I kind of thought of it as like a subcommittee of every other subcommittee. So if something would go to full Ways and Means, it would get kicked down to Transportation Economic Development. They would kick it down to the IT committee. Would kick it back up the food chain like that. And it met twice a week, and I thought that was a pretty good system for evaluating software projects. So now we're not a Ways and Means subcommittee, and so now if you have an IT project, you go to whatever's the appropriate, Transportation Economic Development subcommittee, and they might get luck out and have somebody who knows or cares about IT, and maybe not, and then it gets kicked back up there, and you get a $90 million 9-year project that goes through that process there. So I'd be interested to know, first of all, what do you think about the idea of the IT committee being a Ways and Means committee? And then second of all, do you think there's adequate rigor in the system that we have right now of overseeing those software projects?
Mr. Representative Nierman, I was going to talk about the IT committee because it's one of the committees we actually staff.
Yeah.
So because we staff it, we still have that interrelationship with what goes to that committee and what you guys do on it, because I know you're on the committee. Mm-hmm. And so because the primary staff person for that committee is an LFO staff person, so at some point this session you will start getting in the IMT committee. You will get some presentations on some of these larger budget software or computer projects. And what we're doing now is just coordinating that, because as we're in this phase one for the budget subcommittees, they're hearing about these projects, and then we will get into more detail in the next 2 months on what projects are out there. And we would expect the IMT committee to give us technical view of those projects so that we can then transmit that back to the budget subcommittee. So like if DOR, for example, which is an agency within your purview here, for their project, we would expect you to be able to give that information from the IMT committee to the budget subcommittee to say, you know, we think this is going good and it should continue. So we're looking for that kind of expertise. So that's we did the IT subcommittee a couple years ago because there had been a long period of time where that joint committee had not been appointed, and we felt that we needed that, so we recommended the leadership that something be done so that we had a forum for talking about IT projects with members. And so at that time the arrangement was, well, we can add another subcommittee. So I think it's much more, it has greater standing, I think, as an independent joint
policy
committee. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So and because we staff it, then we still have that connection to it. So.
Can I do one little follow-up?
Of course, please.
So this is, I'm cheating here. I'm going to just change the topic a little bit. One thing I've been begging for is that the stage gate artifacts be put in a publicly accessible place online, and just have a website of all, these are the projects we have going on, and these are the documents we expect, which is not a live link. And then once the document's turned in, then it's turned into a live link that goes to the document. And I've asked the Office of the State CIO to do that, and maybe LFO could do that. The documents exist. I know you have them in your possession, so I'll just put the ask out there for
you.
Okay.
I will check into that, and we'll see what we can do. So,
Ken, really quick before we move off the organization chart, I think this is a question I've asked you for the last 4 years. You're definitely an experienced member of the legislature. You've been around a long time. You know where all the bones are buried. What's the plan to make sure the deputy legislative fiscal officer is adequately trained for when you one day decide to go watch baseball games?
I think it's called the Vulcan mind meld thing. Actually, Mr. Chair, as you probably know, we've had a transition in that position. We had Mr. Hill, Darren Hill, was in that position for a number of years, and then now he's the legislative administrator. So we talked Paul Siebert into taking that position, and so he's doing that now. He's learning with the idea that when I get run over by a bus, that he will come in and do that. So
so there is a transition
plan. There is a transition plan in place, and we all need to be very nice to Paul so that he will continue on that track. Because, but yeah, he's doing a very good job, and he's really stepped up in learning the process. And he's been here a long time, too. I mean, he's been here,
sure,
15, 20 years. I don't know exactly, but sure. I don't want to age him too much, but...
Well, that's good to know. I actually didn't know he was the deputy legislative fiscal officer, so that's great to know.
Yeah, he is.
Thank you.
And you've worked with him a lot. So
he's A+.
Yeah. So one other thing on the 10 principal analysts, we have a relatively new position there, again, which we didn't get it added to us. We just carved it out. And this is a position that now focuses primarily on bonding and capital construction. But... she also does have some budget assignments for the same reason as the fiscal analyst, but her main focus is on all the bonding projects. We felt it was time that with the level of bonding activity in the state that we needed to have someone dedicated to that purpose as much as possible, and work with the treasurer and the Department of Administrative Services Capital Finance Office to really not just get the bill passed, but follow up on projects and watch how they're going and get feedback and know when the bond sales are happening, know when we're refinancing bonds and when we're not, which is information that we weren't getting before. So this is another function I think that is really helping the entire legislature keep up to speed on what's going on in the bonding room.
Perfect. Senator Johnson.
I think also having the opportunity, and we've talked about this offline, to help educate others who are using bonds to know what the rigor of LFO is, mm-hmm, with respect to those bonds, and to be less oblique. We started moving money around inside some of the regional solutions and got into trouble that there was not adequate connectivity to LFO. And I think making sure that everybody knows what the rules of engagement are so that folks don't inadvertently or otherwise blunder into not keeping LFO up to speed might be something you'd add to her portfolio.
Yes, and Ms. Chair, Senator Johnson, that's one of the things that she has been doing is she's the prime contact now for any kind of a bond project proposal. If someone has an idea of what they want, they go to her and she keeps track of them. So then during session, we usually add three or four positions, session positions to help, and like Michael here is one of them. So, and we, as you know, we couldn't run these meetings without their help. So we add those during session. Each of our analysts has a set of assignments. That's available on our webpage. And they're a mixture of, we try to focus people in the program areas so that there's, but at sometimes because of turnover, we can't have that really clean. So there's a mixture of program areas that some people might have. It is interesting that in Oregon, we have one of these offices. Some states have two, mm-hmm. a House office and a Senate office. Other states have four because they have a House majority and a House minority that do the same work, Senate majority, Senate minority. And some states like Texas and California have well over 150 people doing what we do. Of course, bigger budgets, bigger state, but still. So we have two activities. We sort of split up our world into session and interim. And it was easy once, but now the interim's stranger because of annual sessions and emergency board meetings. But during session, our responsibilities are mostly tied to budget development and fiscal impact statements. That's what we do. We work for the Ways and Means Committee. We're the primary staff. Because it's a joint committee, it's in some ways it's a very efficient committee, and so we get a lot of end of session policy bills here because we move paper really efficiently between the chambers because of the joint nature of the committee. And as you know, we have like seven subcommittees normally. That one year we had eight because of the IT committee one session. The one that you don't hear of mostly as much as the regular ones is the Capital Construction Subcommittee, and that's the one where at the end of session it will deal with all the bonding bills, the capital construction bills, and the end of session bills where we are trying to wrap up the loose ends of the adopted budget for the biennium.
Yeah, Senator Johnson.
Mr. Rocco, have you discussed with leadership, if you think it's desirable, any way to limit the amount of research that your analysts are doing in addition to, on policy bills, in addition to the budget analytics that they're already doing? I'm thinking there's some very complicated bills that are making their way through the system right now, and I don't know how much of that research is defaulting to your shop when appropriately it might be done by the agency. Or I'm really asking about access to your folks. You make your shop very friendly and very accessible, and I don't know whether or not, given the pace of the session, you're overwhelmed.
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, that I can admit at times we're totally overwhelmed and appear to be underwater, but there's a sort of a dedication of LFO staff that they put in the hours they need to do the job, and we work to get things done. We have pointed out one of the issues is getting policy bills to Ways and Means where the policy isn't finished yet. Bills are supposed to come here so that we can tack on the cost to them. If they need an amendment to get money appropriated to them, we do that. Just because of the nature of the first chamber deadline, the second chamber deadlines, a lot of times bills come here and they're not ripe yet. One of the things we're hoping to do is work more closely with the new Legislative Policy and Research Office to see if we can have them participate more on that policy side throughout the process. In the past, they had session staff that wouldn't continue. And so at some point in session, they would let some of those people go. And they knew about the policy and the bill, but they're no longer here now. And so that would default to us. So we're working out we're going to work out something that allows us to work more closely with them and to have them follow that bill even when it comes to Ways and Means so that we don't have to become the overnight policy experts if they're still here in the building. And since they do have more permanent staff now, we think that is a good opportunity for us to work together.
Thank you. So let me ask one question. This is the one tough question. If you look at your progress report, you folks exceeded every one of your goals, every one of your targets you exceeded, except for one, and that was availability of information. I think I know why that is, but what's your take on why that is?
Mr. Chair, I'm not really sure.
It's weird. You got straight A's, C plus.
It may just be because people don't know where to find it. We do put a lot of things on our webpage, but we don't market it. Mm-hmm. We're not a marketing agency. We figure, since we're sort of research analysts, we figure people know how to research and find things. And I mean, that may be our mistake. Maybe we should market ourselves a little bit more.
I'll tell you what I think it is. I think it's because you deal with such technical information that you provide accurate information to a member, but they don't understand how to read it or understand what's actually being presented to them. I mean, I know for myself, it took me a decade to really figure out what's going on here. And I think you get a lot of newer members who ask a question, you present the information, but they just don't know what's actually being presented.
And one of the things we've tried to do more and more is produce these short little, we call them budget briefs or budget information reports, and we try to produce those. I think this last year we had a whole series like on PERS issues, mm-hmm. that I don't know if member, sometimes we send those out through Gov Delivery and we just blast them out to.
They've been a great resource for our office.
But I think, again, a lot of people just don't know to look at the website and see, if there's something new out there or not. So.
Yeah.
I think some of it also might be managing expectations. If I think this body is deficient in one area, it's prepping new people for what to expect. And if I show up down in LFO or, frankly, LRO, and I say, write my bill for me,
right.
That's not your job.
Right.
And to have you do all the analysis that would result in a written bill or something you could take to LFO, I don't fault you at all. I think we ought to do a better job of
right.
prepping new people for what the expectations of the offices are.
I think you're right, Sandra. That's a good point.
Did you say that again? I'd just like to hear it.
Yeah, don't say that too loud.
I'm only allowed to tell you that once a day.
Okay, cool.
So another thing that we do that is different than, like, for example, the committee staff, we actually bring recommendations into you on budgets and based on what the Ways and Means co-chairs have directed us to do. And then once those recommendations are adopted and they're taken taken to the full committee, and then we follow that all along. So if you end up having to carry a bill on the floor, we'll be there to help you answer any questions. So that staff support continues through the entire process to the full committee and then onto the floor, House and Senate floors. So the other thing we do during session is the fiscal impacts, and we were given this responsibility in 1991. Before that, in 1990, the legislature gave the fiscal office three new positions to create a fiscal impact statement process. Before that, fiscal impacts were done by the executive branch, They were generally incomplete. They came late. They were generally delivered at the time the floor debate was happening, and so there were unpleasant surprises a lot of times. So the legislature decided that they wanted to control that process, so they hired three people in 1990 to set that up. And unfortunately for them, one of those people was me. So I've started at the fiscal impact level. I'm sure you've seen these, and we try to, a lot of times we don't have enough information to put a precise number in, but if we can, we will. But our intent is to just have an independent, objective analysis of what the bill does to state and local government. We do two biennia, And that's so that, and, but we don't allow inflation in the second biennium. We do the two biennium just to show if there's a delayed implementation date or something like that, what the full costs would be. I mean, one of the, a normal bill without an emergency clause doesn't take effect until January of the following year. So your costs, of course, are going to be smaller in the first biennium than in a full two-year period. So that's why we do that. And there was an additional bill passed not too a couple of years ago that for a new crime we have to do lookout five biennium because a lot of new crimes have a slow ramp up period, and so people were concerned that it may be zero cost now, but once people get into the system and are in prison, that cost goes up dramatically in the future. So for new crime bills, we do a 10-year look.
I just wanted your reassurance about your analyst's ability to push back on agencies when they come in and they don't want a bill and they lard up the fiscal. Mm-hmm. And it's always been my experience that your folks pretty aggressively go after the agency if it looks like their analysis porks up the bill so much it can't possibly make it through the process. And I want to thank you for that.
Thank you, Ms. Chair, Senator Johnson. Yeah, that's one of the things that we try to do. It's very important to us. And the way we do this is because we have experienced analysts who review the fiscals. So we have the people that write the fiscals, and then any agency that it affects, the budget analyst responsible for that agency has to read over the fiscal, read the bill, too, not just the fiscal, but the bill, and see if an agency is doing something like that. And you know what happens. It's not, you know, some agencies are very straightforward and do a very professional job, but we like catching people in those kinds of situations.
Root out the malfactors.
Yes, we do. And then once they give us something, if they, for example, one ploy is they look at whose bill it is, and then all of a sudden it's no cost. And if they tell us that, and then they come back in a year and say, oh, this bill's costing us a lot of money, we pull out the file and say, no, sorry. It's not what you said before. So it's an interesting process. So then in the interim, really what we try to do is follow up on agency execution of the budget to make sure that they're doing what you thought they were doing and to make sure they're implementing the legislation that you wanted, the policy option packages that you approved. So we do that, and we staff the Joint IT Committee, which is now ongoing. We staff the Joint Legislative Audit Committee. We do various task forces that are created by bills. In the past three sessions, we've done the task force on the budget process, and that resulted in a revamping of a lot of the arcane decades-old budget, statutory budget language. We had a task force on capital construction, which is still working through some things. And then this last interim, we had the task force on reserve funds that we staffed and worked with Pew on looking at some of the issues surrounding an adequate size reserve fund and what states are doing to make those more robust and be able to survive through a recession. We have some other reports that are statutorily required to do. We have one on liquidated and delinquent accounts that we're required to do every year. And we have a biennial report on semi-independent state agencies. And we just finished the latest one of that report and made some recommendations to that the audit committee might want to look at, maybe expanding the scope of that to some other agencies that receive state money but have no reporting requirement to the body at all. So I think the audit committee is going to look into that maybe.
Mr. Chair?
Yep, Senator.
Could that also include, Mr. Rocco, some of the 501c3s that are direct beneficiaries of general fund out of this body? It has struck me that there's not much opportunity for oversight. And some of the regional solution projects, last year when we had that strange process where some of the regional solutions went through OBDD and some of them were just direct appropriations. There was a water project in Southern Oregon. I don't know for the amount of money that was appropriated, if that work was ever completed, what happened to it? Was there any after action report that showed a degree of accountability? I just don't know.
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, I think I don't know if that do you remember, Teresa, if we got that far into it or not? But we were looking at any entity that receives state money, and it is sort of one of these quasi-state agencies. So I don't know if it would apply to what you're talking about or not. But a regional solutions would definitely be included in that, a regional solutions type project. But
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, as I recall, the law is fairly specific, so I'm not sure that it would necessarily through that vehicle, but certainly through asking audit committee or LFO in general to look at those things. There's nothing that prohibits that from being looked at, as I understand it.
But I'm just thinking there was some money given to a housing organization that ostensibly is a private not-for-profit. I don't know if they ever built any houses. I don't know if any people are in shelter now because of their work, and I just don't know what the vehicle is to report back to you or the Assembly in general about how efficacious the expenditure of those funds were.
Yes, Mr. Chair and Senator Johnson, and if we know of those entities, we would follow up, and the one you're mentioning is required to supply a quarterly report to LFO, which we've been receiving on a regular basis.
The housing or the water?
The housing one.
Thank you.
You know, the one interim responsibility I don't see on there, but I know you folks are deeply involved, is when legislators contact you during the interim asking questions. I'll bet you my office over the 18 months when we're in the interim is probably called 50 times with just, you know, random questions of why did we do this, what is this, explain this to me.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, that's standard. We answer lots of questions. If somebody will want to know, you know, a specific program, what's the history of it?
You start multiplying that times 90 members. Yeah. That adds up to a lot of work.
But it's interesting work because, I mean, it is. But it can get a little on the heavy side, but if and members are, and the public too, we get questions from the public that we respond to, and it's just if there's a understanding that may take us a couple of weeks to get back, but we will do that. We try to respond to everybody we can.
I just noticed there's no bullet point there, but I know you folks are up to your elbows in that work.
That's a good point because it does take quite a bit of time. So we've covered most of these staffing things, but we do staff the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. That's our primary responsibility. In the interim committee meets, interim Joint Ways and Means meets in the first interim. We have now divided up interims into the short interim and the long interim. So the first is the short interim. And that committee will meet, and it only has the Interim Ways and Means Committee does not have the authority that you have during session. It really can only approve grant applications, federal grant applications, and acknowledge receipt of reports that are required by budget note or statute. So that's really the only real authorities it has because there's no assembly meeting at the time. The emergency board does not exist during session. It ends as soon as session starts. It goes away. But the first thing that you do when you sine die, before you're allowed to leave the building, you have to have a emergency board meeting. So if there have been times when we've met at 4:30 in the morning to have an emergency board meeting because we have to that body has to be impaneled and rules adopted, and so that if anything happens, it's there to take its constitutional authorities and deal with whatever is going on. And it does have a limited set of constitutional authorities. It's not the assembly. It can only do certain things. So now I'm in trouble.
Well, we just needed to take a walk.
I'm sure that
we were so impressed by the testimony.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure. So I'm going to just ignore the people that come in the room, right? So the other committees that we staff by statute, we're responsible for these is the Joint Legislative Audit Committee, which is responsible for reviewing audits and conducting performance and program evaluations. We staff the Joint Legislative Committee on Information Management and Technology. This committee had been hibernating for a number of years. Both of these had been, actually. We argued that they should probably be revitalized. And so for a period of time, they met. They were joint. They met. It was audits and IT, which was okay, but it was a little cumbersome. But then we were able to get them both appointed, or leadership decided to appoint both separately, and now they're both functioning. And I think there's interest in continuing that because they're both doing some pretty good work, I think. The IMT committee, back when it was first formed, it was staffed by LFO, but we didn't have any dedicated staff at that time for it. And so a lot of it was very high technology-oriented conversations, and so we tried different things. We contracted for a while, and we had our budget analysts try to do that stuff, but it was complicated. And so that's one of the reasons we decided to go with having our dedicated staff. So now we have two positions that are dedicated to that, to staffing that committee, but they also do other work. And you will see them come in and make recommendations on policy option packages. And then there is a Transparency Oregon Advisory Commission, which we are also staff, which is responsible for the website. There's a Transparency Oregon website, which has been getting very good reviews. I think there's a scoring system for it, and I think it's like it got one of the best scores in this last year. So just on our key performance measures, Mr. Chair mentioned these already, but we basically just have a customer service one, and those are our most recent scores on it. It's really a survey, mostly of members, but I think other people are allowed to respond.
I have to share with you from personal experience, your folks have just been excellent. They're just excellent to work with. It's helpful, timely, accurate, and so I'm a little thrown by that information availability. Again, I think there's more behind that number.
Well, it's worth looking into, so yeah. We'll get someone to check that out. So just in conclusion, we didn't put anything in here on reduction options, but similar to Paul Werner was mentioning, is we're very heavy staff personnel personal services. So our reduction options usually just start down the list of positions that we have, and that's how we would deal with any kind of reduction that we might have. Our budget proposal is for our current service level budget, but we understand what the whole budget situation is, of course. So we know
that. Better than
we
most.
Hope so. So that's a good sign.
I just like to comment on the whole annual session thing, which has changed our nature of our work. Our interim now is it feels like we're always in session mode, right? Because even though they're both limited in duration, there's, you know, the pre-work, there's the work during, and then there's post-work. And so even though the year session is only 45 days, we start working on that in the, you know, in the fall, and we end up producing some of that information that people can't find after we're done. And so all that takes us not just 45 days, but more like 120 days. And then we have the emergency board, which meets in the long interim. It meets every time you have legislative days. And even though that meeting is like 2 days, it really takes us 7 to 8 weeks because we get the requests from agencies and we have to analyze and review them. And we have to do all of our recommendations and paperwork. Then we have to, afterwards, because the emergency board is changing law when it makes changes in budgets, then we have to codify that and send it to the Secretary of State so that it can be, agencies can then get it into the budget system and change the money they're allowed to spend and things. So it is a sort of a intense process that we go through, much longer than just the time that you're here for legislative days. And so because of that, one of these, we do have dedicated staff for the IMT committee, but one of the committees that I think is suffering a little bit is the audit committee, because this time we were hoping to do three or four projects for the audit committee. And we did have some staff transition, so that didn't help. But we ended up getting one and a half done, and we're still working on the half one. We're still trying to finish it up. But it has changed our ability to get out and see how agencies are actually implementing budgets a little bit because of those time constraints. So
Ken, let me ask you this question. If the co-chairs allowed it, and I underline that, if they allowed it, does your staff have the expertise to take an agency and do a zero-based budget on it? If the co-chair said yes and we allocated the time, say, during a five-month session, could you take a mid-size agency and just build it from the bottom up?
Mr. Chair, I think we could do that, yeah. You know, our system in Oregon is something that's called modified zero-based budgeting, because by law, agencies are supposed to include a 90% budget. So our view is most agencies, if you're going to have a Department of Aviation, there are certain things that you will have to have, and that's part of that 90%. Then you get to the 10%, which is, you know, you... That's where you're dealing with most of this, is that fringe part of it. So, and you know, maybe 80% would be a better number than 90, but it's, we call it modified zero-based. I mean, it's a phrase of art, but that's what it's known in the budget world. So whether that's percent should be more, you know, lower or not, but in your case, yeah, I think we certainly could, it might be a good test to see what someone would come up with
right. From just to see
medium-sized agency.
Yes, Sandra.
I think it's interesting that all of us have experienced the litany of lamentations from agencies about how they all need more money, they can't live without more money. And here we have two of the most complex shops that serve the legislature, and both of them were tossed mushball questions about, do you have enough people? And the answer was, we have dedicated staff. We'll get by on a CSL budget. I just think that shouldn't be lost on the committee today.
Great point.
Mr. Co-Chair,
yes.
Is that something that you are interested in exploring?
I think it is, but I think we'd have to have the co-chairs give us authorization on that, because I think it would take a tremendous amount of time and effort from LFO, and I don't know if your staff would be available to do that. But that's something we could talk to the co-chairs about.
You're taking nominations?
All right. Any other questions or comments?
Well, Mr. Co-Chair, yes. Do we need to file a potential conflict of interest in reviewing this budget? Or?
Right. I do not.
Okay.
Thank you for asking, though. And on that fun note, Ken, I want you to know on behalf of this committee, we really, really appreciate your leadership and all the good work that's done by your staff. There's no way we could do it without you, and you folks are tops. So
thank
appreciate
you,
it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. All righty. Anything else before the committee? Teresa, anything we need to think about?
No.
All right. Michael, are we good?
Yes, sir.
All right. Colleagues, seeing no other work before us today, we are going to be adjourned.
What was the purpose of the walk?
Going to be adjourned.
What was the purpose of the walk?